Hi there, welcome to Talk Canicross. I'm Janetta George.
And I'm Gail Walker. We're here today to talk all things Canicross, the fun way to get fit with your dog.
So each month we'll be joined by a special guest or two. We'll hear from professionals, regular Canicrossers, and also dog and human experts in their field. It will be real people and real stories.
So we hope you'll join us, whether it's for training tips, dog talk, or just for fun and encouragement. This is Talk Canicross, brought to you by DogFit. And don't forget to hit subscribe and keep in touch with all things Canicross.
As Canicrossers, the health and well-being of our dogs is the main priority. We love getting out there and running whenever we can, whatever the weather. However, as the weather warms up, how hot is too hot? It's always a question we are asked, and especially with new people to the sport. Our guests in this episode are canine researchers Anne Carter and small animal vet Emily Hall from Hot Dogs. They have a website where they share their research into canine heat stroke and heat-relating disorders. So we're really interested to talk to you today. So welcome to you both.
Hi there.
Hi, Anne and Emily. Yeah, lovely to see you. I guess the first question, just to give everybody a bit of background, is, yeah, could you tell us a bit more about yourselves and you know, how you've landed where you are and why you're so passionate about what you do? So be Anne first.
Yeah, Anne first.
So my name's Anne Carter. I am a senior lecturer at Nottingham Trent University. I've been there for just over 10 years now. I've been canicrossing for about 13 years and bike drawing for about 5, I think. And so my research interest and my personal interest kind of combined, and I started to question whether we should be running our dogs in the hotter weather and whether there was a risk to my dogs in running them in heat. And in trying to answer that question, I met Emily when she joined Nottingham Trent and pulled her in on the heat stroke research that we started to do.
Absolutely. So I'm Emily. I am a small animal vet. I worked in practice for about a decade and then moved into teaching. And as Anne said, when I joined NTU, was looking for a research project to dip my toe into. dragged that into fields with thermometers and canicross dogs. I'm afraid I'm a cat owner. Oh, dirty word. And ironically, none of the jobs I've ever had have been kind of conducive with having a dog. I live vicariously through other people's, which included my parents' golden retriever, who suffered mild heat-related illness, which I might touch on later, depending on whether it comes up. But yeah,
brilliant. So yeah, no, it's great to have you on here, and I know there's lots of people interested to hear about what your research has done, what you've got to say. So, I mean, I guess one of the first questions is, you know, what are the signs we need to look out for when running our dogs as the temperatures rise? And we're at that point now, really, aren't we? So just coming into April, and we're getting the odd day where it's cold and then getting warmer.
Yeah, just a couple of weekends ago, it was pushing into the mid-20s, wasn't it? At least it was in the Midlands. Now is the time to be looking, because we've obviously had a cold winter, well, relatively cold winter. The dogs haven't been out in the heat for a while, so they're not currently acclimatized to the heat. So now really is the danger zone, when if we have sudden hot spells, they're going to hit harder than they would do in the middle of summer. And what we would really like people to recognise are those very, very early warning signs that their dog's struggling. And those range from as simple as kind of what we call excessively panting. So hopefully, if you're running with your dog, you know your dog. You know what your dog normally looks like when they're a bit exhausted. Excessive panting is different to that. It's like they can't stop. You know, their tongue is all the way out. People often call it spaded. So the tongue will be really extended, kind of flattened. Their mouths will be gaping. Their chests will be going like bellows. And it won't stop when you stop. So normally, obviously, a dog will pant for a little while and then it will calm down. This will just keep going. And we have a video of a dog that's doing this that we'll share with you so that you can share it with your listeners. Yeah. Because I think it's easier to see it rather than describe it. If your dog's having difficulty breathing, that can also be a sign. And then as we progress, you'll get to the point where they struggle to carry on with their exercise, or they're unwilling to carry on, might even start lying down, becoming quite tired. And subtle changes for sports dogs are a lack of focus and a lack of performance. So one of our research participants, and I believe vet and avid canny crosser, told us about an incident with her dog in February last year. Wow. When he overheated, and she noticed because he wasn't kind of tracking straight, he wasn't pulling the way he normally did, and then when she really looked at his breathing, she went, do you know what, I know what that is, we need to stop. So yes, those early signs, if you don't spot that, it's going to progress, and then you're potentially looking at vomiting, diarrhea, really salivating. So kind of if your dog's ever been car sick and you think, how are they producing that much saliva that it's literally soaking through the seats, that's hypersalivation. And if we progress beyond that, then we're looking at things like seizures, neurological deficits, blood in the vomit, blood in the diarrhea, losing consciousness completely, and they'll stop panting at that point, and then death.
Oh.
Yeah. Well, yes, I mean, there's obviously a number of stages, aren't there, and that's the stage you obviously want to, we don't even want to get to that
first stage, that stage,
but even the first stages. So I mean, we will come on to ask you about, you know, how we mitigate for that in the first place, because prevention is better than cure. But equally, if we do get that situation, it's good to understand, you know, how we manage that. So before we come on to all of that, just on the back of what you were just saying, because obviously, just like people, everyone's different, and dogs are too. So are there certain breeds that tend to be more susceptible to the warmer weathers? And, you know, can you base it on that even? Possibly not, but I'm sure it's a contributing factor.
Did you want to jump in, Anne, or do you want me to?
There are certain breeds that are more at risk, and certainly the brachycephalic, so the short-faced breeds, struggle more to thermoregulate, so to keep themselves cool. So things like your French bulldogs, pugs, Cavalier King Charles Spaniels. But we do know that there are other breeds that perhaps the ones you wouldn't expect so much to be at higher risk. So things like Springer Spaniels, Golden Retrievers, Greyhounds, and then also Dog de Bordeaux and Chow Chows. So there is quite a mix there. But at the same time, that's not to say that other breeds aren't at risk alongside it. So saying, oh, well, that's okay because I've got a German Shorthaired Pointer, so they'll be fine. The risk is still there. These are just breeds that are more susceptible, we would say.
Yeah.
And any dog can be affected. And that's the message we want people to remember. But if you've got one of those breeds that is more at risk, it's even more important that you know how to recognize it and have that awareness.
Yeah. And even the same breed, you can have one that just copes with the heat better than another. I've got that.
Absolutely.
I used to have two Staffies, and one was much better. One gets slightly warm, and he's definitely, I can sense that he feels it more.
So. Yeah, absolutely. And I think just coming back to the canny cross side of things, there is the assumption that, well, my dog still wants to pull, it still wants to go for a run, so it must be okay. And actually, we do see in some of the breeds particularly, they have such a drive to want to run and to canny cross, and my dogs are exactly the same, that owner awareness and knowing when to pull your dog up and to stop them and go, actually, they are getting too warm, is really, really important, because they will just keep running until the point that you finish your training run and go, oh, actually, you know what, I think we've overdone it a bit. So I think using the dog as a marker to say they'll know when to stop, actually they often don't. And then that's one of the suggestions as to why springers might be more susceptible, just because they're on the go all the time and they are so high energy.
Yeah, that's a really interesting point, isn't it? Because you know the dogs will go on forever, and that we're the ones really that should be not expecting them to tell us. One of the things that you said earlier, Emily, was that the critical time is when there's sudden changes in temperature. So I think that you wrote a blog post, which we can link into the show notes, but about keeping your dog active through the winter months and how that can help you with going through into a kind of warmer temperatures. Could you tell us a bit more about that?
Yeah, absolutely. So the same as us, really. If you arrive in the summer and you're physically fit, you've been athletically training, you're a healthy body weight and you're healthy overall, you will cope with the heat a lot better. Heat is dangerous to everyone, regardless of how healthy you are, what breed you are, or what have you. But certainly if you are fit, you will cope better. So yeah, letting your dog kind of slack off during the winter because it's a bit cold and it's a bit rainy and you'd rather not take them out. If they've piled on some pounds and they're carrying some excess fat, that fat is going to trap the heat in their body and is going to make it harder for them to cool down. They're also carrying more weight, so they're working harder for every step they take. And if they're getting really obese, then that fat is also taking up space where they should be breathing. So it's then limiting the effectiveness of that panting and stopping them from cooling quite so much. We also know from both human and equine and canine science that, you know, the act of cooling your body down requires quite considerable increase in how hard your heart has to work to pump the blood around your body to get it to the surface, to get it cooling. So if your heart is fit and you're cardiovascularly fit going into the summer, you will cope better with that stress and you will be more effective at cooling. So yeah, keeping your dog fit through the winter is super important for being ready for that heat. And also the fact that they will get hot when they exercise in the winter. So they'll kind of learn to cope with that heat a bit better, and the mechanisms they use to cool down will be better developed and ready for when the hot weather hits.
Yeah, that totally makes sense. And even, you know, they should still be drinking water, just like people, you still need to drink and quench your thirst. And so, yeah, it makes complete sense. So I guess the, for want of a better word, the burning question is, you know, can you run your dog in the summer? You know, can you actually do that?
It's one of those, there is always a risk. We were saying before we started, you know, we've seen clinical records from dogs who died from heat stroke exercising in January when there has been snow on the ground. So there is always a risk at any temperature. As ambient conditions get hotter, that risk increases. Now, there will be some dogs, and particularly, you know, your sight hounds, your salukis and what have you, that will cope with very, very hot weather and would run safely. But can you hand on heart predict which those dogs will be and at what temperature and at what pace, pulling what size human, who's adding however much resistance to them? Not really. So I think it's a case of risk assessing every time you head out when it's warm and deciding, okay, if the worst happened, could you respond quickly enough to stop them from deteriorating? So, you know, how far are you away from transport if something horrible happened? Could you cool them? Is there water nearby that you could use to cool them down? Can you recognize the signs in your dog and be confident that you can say, I need to pull up? And can you recognize in yourself that you would have the kind of the self-control to make that decision? Because we know in race situations, people get a bit hot-headed and it's kind of like, oh, the finish line's only a kilometer away, we'll just push through. Yeah, but is it worth it if it means your companion's not going to make it at the end of the day?
I mean, we always say, you know, the dog comes first, 100% all the time. And if in doubt, you know, you don't take your dog out. I guess it's always a difficult one because you can't say don't run in summer, because our summers, it depends on the temperature, because like we said, we've had some hot weather in March, but you can actually have, you know, an August that's quite cool. Depends on, like you say, the temperatures and also where you run, because we do a lot of running in the shade and when there's plenty of water and go out really early in the morning.
I think that's the other key as well, is do you need to go out at the time that you're looking at going out? Can you go out early before it starts to get too hot? As you say, can you run in the woodland, in the shaded areas where there's potentially a stream that you can just throw them into? So I think as well, be guided by what you feel is safe for your dog, not perhaps, well, there's a group going out and I want to join them and they've said it's okay for their dogs. So again, thinking on that individual basis. I run through my dogs through the summer, but I run at stupid o'clock in the morning to make sure that it's nice and cool for them. And yes, there are days that at the end of the day, if they miss a run, it's not going to do them any harm. If they go out and it's too hot for them, it could kill them. So it's making that decision of, you know what, we're not going to run today.
Yeah, I mean, we obviously take it very seriously as well, and likewise, we're running at stupid o'clock and with routes with water, and You know, it's always a really high priority for us. But I think that, Emily, you touched on earlier that obviously a dog with increased weight that wasn't fit through the winter, that obviously increases its risk. Is there anything else that would increase a dog's risk of getting heat stroke?
Yeah, absolutely. Anything that's going to impact their ability to cool down. And what you have to remember is that whereas we sweat and horses sweat, and that's incredibly important, dogs don't. They have sweat glands, they do produce sweat, but they're not sweating to cool down, they're panting. And panting uses, you know, as much liquid as sweating. So they need to be well hydrated. If they're not well hydrated, they won't cool as effectively. So any time you're worried your dog might not be hydrated is a time to be super careful in warm weather. You know, that could be a bout of diarrhea, could be vomiting. It could be that, you know, they just didn't eat their dinner and drink quite as much as normal yesterday. Could be you were traveling and you were on the road, so you know that they didn't have access to water as much as they should have done. But any time you think they might be a bit dehydrated, absolutely be super, super careful. As I said, panting is really important. So anything that impacts their ability to breathe and breathe freely. So if your dog's had a bout of kennel cough, you could be looking at months before their respiratory tract is completely healed. And as vets, we do see dogs present with heat stroke because they've been out after having kennel cough, and they just, you know, anyone who's had COVID, you'll know it can be weeks and weeks and weeks before your respiratory tract completely heals. Likewise, Anne's already mentioned the flat face dogs. So dogs with BOAS, your brachy dogs with BOAS, are at really high risk, and actually overheating is one of the things vets will use to decide to recommend surgery for those dogs. But also laryngeal paralysis, which you may or may not have come across, particularly common in your big breeds, your Labradors, your Golden Retrievers, your Greyhounds. It's where the kind of the vocal folds in the larynx stop working, so they stop opening. So imagine trying to breathe through a squished McDonald's straw, basically. You usually know your dog has that because they make this brilliant kind of roaring noise when they're breathing, but not always. The Golden Retriever I mentioned earlier, my parents' dog, she was completely silent. We didn't know she had laryngeal paralysis until she started collapsing and overheating on walks. So any kind of large breed dog from, you know, middle to old age is at risk of that. So if you know your dog has that, it is probably time to retire
consideration
them.
Yeah, absolutely. From
competition, and be super careful. Body
do
weight.
They develop that? Sorry to interrupt. Do they develop that as they get older then? Is that a condition?
Yeah, there's a number of reasons they can develop it, and it's one of those where we're not entirely sure why. Possibly because of the route the nerves take in the neck. But yes, it's something that older dogs, especially labs, are prone to developing as they get older. And likewise, anything you do to their throat that could restrict their breathing. So people running on a collar makes me incredibly anxious. Gosh. Because that's then, we know from Anne's research that's then compressing enough to narrow the airway that they're trying to breathe around. So yeah, you want them to be able to breathe well. Big dogs. So the heavier your dog, regardless of the breed and regardless of that, whether that's a fit weight or an obese weight, heavier dogs will get hotter and stay hotter for longer than small ones, purely from a thermodynamic point of view. Coat, it's a really thick coat. When they're exercising, that's going to trap heat against their skin, and that's going to stop them from cooling quite so effectively. And from our research, any dog over the age of 8 has higher risk of young compared to younger dogs.
Yeah, that's why insurance premiums only go up.
Absolutely.
funny that.
Yep.
Okay, so it's very interesting, and you know, there's a lot of, obviously a lot of common sense in that. And obviously when you talked about the tightness around the neck when people run with leads on, that's why we completely, you know, we're always really pushing the benefits of, you know, running in a proper harness, a sports harness for dogs. So it's not restricting the movement, it's not blocking their airways at all. But obviously it's really good to be looking out for these signs and doing as much as possible to prevent it in the first place by knowing your dog, thinking about the conditions and all the other things you both have cited. So, but let's say worst case scenario, your dog is showing some signs of overheating, or worse, that, you know, it's gone to the extreme. What sort of measures should they be taking immediately on the back of that?
So Well, the first thing is recognizing it. So that's absolutely the message that we have, is know those signs and know kind of roughly how bad the situation is based on those signs and how urgent it is that you take action. If you're out and you're exercising, stop. That's the first thing to do. Stop the activity. The activity is what's making them hot. Stop it. Get them to lie down, get them in the shade and try and get them to calm. If they're still panting and they're not responding to that, then that's the time to be looking for water. Water is the most effective way we have of cooling dogs. So that comes back to knowing your route, where you're going, whether there's access to water or carrying water. We hear a lot of people talk about, oh, it needs to be tepid or lukewarm. No, it just needs to be water. Whatever water you have access to is fine. And actually tap water, kind of 16 to 18 degrees, is perfect. So immerse them in it if necessary, or pour it onto them. It does need to get to their skin. So if you've got a particularly fluffy dog, you need to be parting the fur to get to the skin. And phone your vet, get their advice, find out where the nearest one is, and be ready to travel.
I was going to say, I think as well, while you're cooling them down, if you are getting them to the vets, whack the air conditioning on in your car, yeah. So your car's nice and cool, so that once you've cooled them down enough to get them in, then they're staying in a cool environment. You're not moving them to nice and cool with water to then having to put them in a hot car to travel to the vet.
That's a really good point. And are you trying to get them to drink as well? I mean, I guess if it, at the, you know, is it more important to be cooling their skin down than getting them to drink? So that would be your priority, is about just getting the temperature of the skin down.
Yeah, I mean, if they want to drink, that's not a problem. That's probably actually quite a good sign that they're not feeling sick. But if you think about the size of the stomach compared to the overall surface of the dog, you're going to be far more effective covering that whole body surface area than you are just cooling down that teeny tiny little bit.
And sort of talking about kind of cooling them down, obviously there's a lot of dog cooling coats that are out there on the market. There's even ones that people put on when they are running with their dogs. What's your thought on those?
There's no evidence.
Okay.
There's no evidence to say they work. There is evidence to show that they don't work in horses. So, you know, the fabric ones that you load with water, basically, and the fabric is supposed to hold the water. They put them on horses after exercise, and the what would you call it? Moisture holding breathable fabric, without wanting to get into any kind of trademark issues here, performed no better than doing nothing.
Oh gosh,
the horses. So kind of our approach to cooling jackets and wet towels and things like that is, if it is hot and your dog is at rest and your dog looks uncomfortable and they appear to make your dog feel a little bit better whilst you are supervising them very closely, then fine.
Yeah,
you know, the same as us, stick on a wet t-shirt in the summer and you instantly feel a bit better. But we do not want them on when they're exercising, because Anne and I have tried some of these things and they start drying out within 15 minutes. And as soon as they're dry, they're just a jacket, which is holding heat against the dog and adding an extra layer to insulate that heat in while they're exercising. And if you're leaving the dog unattended, then they're going to dry out and they're going to contribute.
Get warm again.
My preference would always be give them a wet towel they can lie on, because then they can move away if they don't like it. And also, if you think about your big fluffy dogs, actually their legs, their belly, their inner thigh, that's where you're going to get the water near their skin more easily. So actually them lying on it will be more effective, and it's not trapping heat as it tries to rise.
And I think as well, if you're looking at using any kind of cooling coat to be able to run dog, then you really need to question the fact that it's probably too hot to be taking them out.
Yeah, precisely. I mean, we've seen the odd, person that's insisting that that's what they want to do. But as you said, the coats dry out within 15 minutes and then they're holding the heat in. So that's not working at all.
I'm just curious, while you were talking about this, it might seem a stupid question, but with people, you can, going back to drinking water, obviously with people, you can drink too much as well as not enough. Can that happen in dogs as well?
Yeah, absolutely. Water toxicity is a real issue. And I know some trainers absolutely refuse to use toys and treats and things when there's water involved. Because, yes, if a dog drinks a large quantity of pure water, then, yes, it effectively causes their brain to swell and can be fatal.
You tend to hear about it in the summer where a dog's been playing fetch in the sea or in a lake.
Or hose pipe play.
Yeah, playing with the hose pipes. And so they're gulping in the water as they're playing. And then you get the water toxicity associated with it.
Oh, yeah, that's a really good point. One of the things that we've talked about previously is there's lots of charts that you can see online and facts and figures, and you know, you should only run your dog if it's this, and you know, what's your view on that? If you're, you know, the weather is a bit warmer, your dog's quite fit, and you've seen one of these charts and you've ticked all the boxes and you think that's fine to go out for a run. But I think, having previously spoken about it, that's not quite the case, is it?
I don't think we'll ever be able to say there is a categorically safe temperature to exercise. You know, a fat brachycephalic dog with BOAS that can't breathe, that's a bit dehydrated, could overheat in very, very cold conditions. They can overheat just sitting at room temperature, quite frankly. So, yeah, there is no safe temperature. And you know, if we tend to go by a rule of if the feels like temperature, which takes into account the sun, the wind, humidity, and the air temperature, and the wind speed, if the feels like is getting anywhere really above 16, then you need to be doing a serious risk assessment. And even over 10, you need to be kind of at least checking that you have a backup plan.
And what would be those sort of questions you'd ask yourself? I don't, as you said, every dog is different, but if you're doing your own personal risk assessment on you and your dog, what would be the kind of questions you'd be asking yourself?
So how fit is my dog currently? You know, am I at the beginning of starting their training, or have we been running, you know, for several months now and they're at peak physical fitness? How hot has it been recently? So, you know, if we're talking August and you've just had a July with a heat wave in the mid 30s, your dog's going to cope a heck of a lot better in the heat than they are in April with a sudden warm Easter weekend, for example. How well is my dog? Are they healthy? Have I been worried about them having diarrhea, having vomiting, not eating quite so well? What am I planning to do with them? How much work is it going to be? How long is it going to take? Do I have a means to respond if there's an emergency? So am I heading out? I think I saw people walking their dogs at the Sycamore Gap up in Newcastle. And I mean, I was flagging. Glorious sunshine. There was no shade anywhere and no water anywhere. And, you know, you're basically doing 2 miles up and down hills. And it's a 2 mile walk to the nearest road to get to a car if there's an emergency. And then easily a 40 minute drive to the nearest vet. That is asking for a disaster. Yeah, can you respond if everything goes pear-shaped? Can you carry your dog? Yeah. If you can't carry your dog, how are you getting them out if they were to collapse?
Yeah, they're really good questions. And I mean, it's like the charts. Everyone likes to have a chart and a formula, but is it even good as a rough guide? Would you just say, don't even look at it? You go by the examples you've just given.
What do you do?
It's much more valuable to work through all those questions and think about your circumstances and your dog than it is to look at any of those charts. I think the risk with the charts is it lulls you into a false sense of security and think, well, it says it's okay to go out, so I'm all right. And I'm sure so you and your listeners have been the same, that you've gone out some days and it's 5 degrees and it's really quite warm, and other days it's 5 degrees and you wish you'd put a long sleeve top and gloves on. And it's all of those other components as well that are so important of, is it sunny, is it humid, is it windy, and is it a cold wind? And I think the problem as well, we often use weather apps as a means of comparing to these charts, and actually the weather apps will give you a shade temperature, and although they'll give a feels like temperature, it's not necessarily the temperature of the location, the exact location you're running at. It's the nearest weather station. So that's another thing to factor in as well, that if you look at the temperature from an actual thermometer, it's probably going to be quite a bit higher than what's on your weather app. So I think knowing your dog and knowing the circumstances are much, much more valuable. I have arbitrary cutoffs for my dogs. They're actually different for each dog, because one of mine runs very hot and he's a pointer, so he doesn't stop. Whereas my previous Canicross dog, He would self-regulate. He would get to 10 degrees and go, you know what, I'm too hot, so I'm just going to trot along and not really pull. So I was much less worried about him because he had the ability to decide he didn't want to because he wasn't so comfortable. And he was never a real risk of overheating in the same way that my pointers are, because they just have that desire to run and do get very hot. So I will always make sure in summer that we run in shade and we run near water and we run in cooler temperatures. So I think that is the real vital thing to think about over and above all of the charts.
Yeah, and even if your dog self-regulates a bit, when you take a typical canicross run and you're running in a pack, a group, it's very easy for dogs to get carried away wanting to keep up with the others. So that's another thing to be mindful of, isn't it?
Absolutely. I think that's something else to consider. If you're thinking, do I go out, don't I go out, are you running with a group? And if you're feeling that actually it might be a little bit too warm, can you go out for a little plod on your own rather than going out with that group, where again, you, as you say, the dogs tend to kind of go, oh, there's other dogs, I'm going to chase. But also you might not have so much control over the route. There might be a little bit more of a feeling of, oh, well, we're doing a 5K loop, so we'll just keep going. It's okay.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't go out if it was too hot at all, but I also cut down the mileage as well, because that's another thing people should consider.
Yeah.
You know, if they're used to running like 8-9 miles or whatever, just go do a 5K and go out early.
Go out early, cut it short. And if all else fails, stop. And I think that's the key as well. Rather than thinking, well, it's a short run, so we'll just carry on, we'll keep going. Stop, give the dog a break, decide if they can manage, and if needs be, turn back and walk back.
Yeah. I mean, one of the, obviously the great things about canicross, especially if you're running in a group of people, is that whole social aspect. And you know, we do run, you know, in social groups with people that will come without their dog, but they'll still run with the group. You've obviously got to work a bit harder, but you know, ultimately you know your own dog. And it's the same when we talk to kind of our nutrition experts as well. You know, whilst we can put kind of guides in place, everybody knows their own dog and should be completely loyal to kind of what they feel and how that their dog is going to be. It's just been really interesting talking to you guys. You're so knowledgeable on the whole thing, and hopefully this will help educate some people as well that maybe hadn't even really even considered that the dogs, you know, need to be seriously looked at in a different way. Just to conclude, Anne, and I know because you're a regular canicrosser and we get a lot of newbies that listen to our podcast, what would you say about anyone that's kind of thinking about starting canicross, maybe listening to this and going, oh my gosh, I can't do it because it's going to, I'm just not sure. What would you say to them?
I would say the biggest risk you've got is it's addictive. I am a complete non-runner who started running with a friend's dog said about 13 years ago. I now am about to go back up to 4 dogs. And I absolutely love it. It builds a wonderful bond and relationship with your dog. And it's so much fun and so sociable. But I think, and I think we've talked a lot about risks and things to be mindful of. And this is about having that knowledge in place to have a safe and enjoyable run rather than putting people off. If you're going to start out with your dog and you think, well, a Labrador sat in the corner and I think he'd quite like this, try and start off in the cooler periods, the cooler parts of the day. And avoid sort of thinking, I'm going to take up canicross when the sun comes out and the weather looks nice. Start it now when the weather's a little bit cooler, so that by the time the weather warms up, then your dog is slightly fitter and slightly more used to it and can cope a little bit better as it gets warmer.
Yeah, and we always say you can always canny trek.
Absolutely.
You don't want to run, so you can hands-free walk with the kit as well. So, yeah.
Yeah, no, that's brilliant. Well, thank you to both of you. And I'm sure we're going to get you on again because it's been really interesting subject to talk about. Thank you for joining us.
Yeah, thank you both very much. Lovely to meet you.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Talk Canicross. We really hope that you've enjoyed it. But don't forget to hit subscribe so we can keep you up to date and let you know when the next episode comes out. Happy canicrossing.